Episode 21 of By Our Own Hands. Dr. Foxlow spoke to Mr. Adair the very next day. I had watched him as he entered the library room. I knew that they would be served tea. Mr. Adair would soon ring his bell and one of his servants would come running. I wanted to be that servant. I wanted to hear their conversation in case it was a continuation of their previous conversation. I had hurried to the kitchen to prepare tea. I worked quickly, hoping that I would not hear Mr. Adair ring his bell until I had finished. I soon was walking down the hallway carrying a tea tray. When I had almost reached the library room, I heard his bell. I entered the room moments later. Mr. Adair looked up. He smiled broadly and clapped his hands. "I did not even have to ask," he said. Dr. Foxlow smiled at me, but I could see that his smile was forced. I nodded to him briefly and walked to the side table to begin pouring the tea. I felt Mr. Adair's eyes on me. I glanced once in his direction. He gave me a faint smile. I glanced at Dr. Foxlow and saw that he was watching me. He looked uncomfortable. I assumed that his mood had much to do with the previous conversation with Mr. Adair and that they would soon resume that conversation. Mr. Adair wasted no time. "Nathaniel, I am sorry if my words offended you," Mr. Adair began. "I appreciate that, John," Dr. Foxlow said. "You are new to this country. You need to understand that my class has been beleaguered. I am not exaggerating," he said. I carried the tea tray to the two of them and placed it onto a table that was close to Mr. Adair. The men fell silent. Dr. Foxlow kept his eyes on me. I walked back to the table and busied myself. 15 years ago, Parliament passed an act that forced landlords to compensate tenants even when they are evicted. Efforts were made to ease a tenant's purchase of land. 6 years later, a further act was passed that fixed rents, and the same act even reduced many of the rents. Courts were established that reduced some by more than 15%. Our Prime Minister, William Gladstone, stated that he wished to make landlordism impossible. Now, 4 years on, a new act is soon to be passed, which will allow tenants to borrow all of the money needed to purchase their holdings. They will even have half a century to pay off their debts, he continued. I see, Dr. Foxlow said. Absolutely nothing has been done for the landlords, who have had their revenues reduced and are now supposed to gladly sell off their land to ignorant peasants, he shouted. I finished cleaning the table and lingered. I watched as Dr. Foxlow nodded thoughtfully. He glanced in my direction more than once. I felt my cheeks flush. Mr. Adair sighed. None of us can survive if we remain landlords. I will not wait for my land to be taken from me. I will rid myself and my damnable tenants once and for all, he said. You have so many acres and much of your land is not occupied by tenants, Dr. Foxlow began, but Mr. Adair angrily interrupted him. I will have none of it. I will not be compelled to obey these laws, which were passed to make my way of life impossible, he spat out. He stood up. I hurried towards the door. This land will be ruined by such legislation. It will all be given over to peasants, he shouted. I walked out of the room. I did not completely close the door. I listened for a short time outside the door. They will not take my land, he added, lowering his voice. The doctor remained calm. Surely there are laws that protect your tenants. You cannot simply rid yourself of them, Dr. Foxlow said. I will find a way. I have done so once before, Mr. Adair said. There was silence. Your tenants have leases, do they not? Dr. Foxlow asked, breaking the silence. They expired months ago. Once I return from my trip abroad, I will give each of them a notice to quit. I don't believe that they are foolish enough to wait for the sheriff to arrive. Will you stay on and assist me? I will need a strong man at my side in case there is trouble, he said. There was a long pause. I wondered how the doctor was going to respond to Mr. Adair's complete indifference towards the suffering he planned to inflict on his tenants. I will stay on and do what I can, Dr. Foxlow said. I have invested elsewhere. I have found a partner in America. We have established a cattle ranch, Mr. Adair said. The doctor was silent. I purchased the ranch a year ago. It was an excellent investment, he continued. Mrs. Adair told me that you two are visiting your ranch soon, Dr. Foxlow said. Yes, we are leaving in a few days. You should come with us, he said. No, thank you. That is very kind, but I have already promised Mrs. Adair that I will stay here. I am taking care of a personal matter for her, he said. Oh, I see. It must be her gardens, Mr. Adair said, chuckling to himself. She has become quite taken with her project, he added. How long will you be gone? Dr. Foxlow asked. A few months, perhaps a bit more. We will travel to Belfast and then travel via train to the port at Queenstown. We will stop at various points to visit with friends. That will take more than a week. It will take us another week to travel to New York and yet another to reach the ranch. It is in the state of Texas. I leave in 2 days, but Mrs. Adair will leave a day later. I have business to attend to, and it is easier to take care of matters in Belfast than it is to ask a banker to travel to Donegal. Will you accompany Mrs. Adair and Mrs. Matterin to Belfast? He asked. Queenstown was known as Cove, the Cove of Cork, for more than a century. It had been renamed Queenstown in honor of Queen Victoria shortly before I was born. The Adairs could have booked passage from Belfast for their American journey, but the most luxurious ships left Cove's port. I suspected that this fact had more to do with their choice of ports than any desire to visit friends. The doctor cleared his throat after some hesitation. Yes, of course, I would be delighted to. Mrs. Matterin is coming too? He asked. Yes, my wife wants Mrs. Matterin to keep her company, Mr. Adair said. I walked away from the door and returned to the kitchen. I found Mrs. Adair in the kitchen. Good morning, Mrs. Adair, I said. I placed the tray on one of the kitchen counters. Mrs. Adair did not answer. She walked to me and handed me a folded piece of parchment. I stared at it and slowly took it from her. She glared at me with disgust. It is a letter of recommendation. Take it to my husband and tell him that I wish for him to sign it, she said. Yes, Mrs. Adair, I said, my cheeks burning. We will leave soon to go abroad. Remove yourself from this house before we return. Dr. Foxlow will make certain that you do, she added. I realized then that I was the personal matter Dr. Foxlow had referred to when speaking with Mr. Adair. She walked away from me. Before leaving the kitchen, she suddenly stopped. She turned to look at me. I stared at her, unable to speak. Her expression was one of total contempt. Make certain to take the gift my husband gave you, she said. I thought of Sal. I felt the thick, creamy paper in my hand. I was surprised that she was able to fold it. My cheeks still burned. She turned again and left the kitchen. I placed the letter in my pocket. I thought of Dr. Foxlow's glances and anxious manner while he was seated with Mr. Adair. He was waiting for me to give Mr. Adair the letter. My cheeks burned even more at the thought of it. I reached into my pocket and felt the letter again. I took a deep breath. I walked into the hall and looked about. It was strangely quiet. I walked towards Mrs. Adair's drawing room. I placed my ear against the door. Silence. I held my breath. I slowly opened the door and looked inside. The room was empty. I ran to her desk. Her writing paper was on her desk. She had not put it away after writing my letter of recommendation. I sat down at her desk and began to write. I wrote quickly. I carefully dipped her pen into the ink and did not spill a drop. When I had finished, I waved the paper about and blew onto it. I closed my eyes and tried to calm myself. I had been another's possession. Those that I had loved the most had been possessions. One had been a disgrace. My obedience could be to my advantage, or it could be to my disgrace. Which would it be? I knew that I would determine that. What example did I have? Mine was that of the lowly, oppressed, and forsaken, those without hope. I would will myself to have hope, and I would have the advantage. I heard a noise at the door. I grabbed my letter and ran to the other side of the room. The noise disappeared. I breathed a sigh of relief. I touched the ink with my finger. It did not smudge. I folded the letter and placed it into my pocket. I went to the door and slowly opened it. I looked down the hall. I saw a maid walking away. I waited for her to finish walking down the hall. Once she was gone, I quickly left the room and closed the door behind me. I returned to the kitchen and prepared another tea tray. I knew that Mr. Adair would ring for tea again. I reached inside my pocket and touched the letter. My heartbeat quickened. I took a deep breath again. I placed the letter onto the tray. I walked to the kitchen door and stood still. I firmly held the tray in my hands. I waited for the sound. A minute passed by, and then another. Finally, I heard him ring his bell. I walked to the library room. I reached the door and willed myself to open it. I walked into the room. Once again, I felt eyes on me. Mr. Adair and Dr. Foxlow were still seated. I placed the tray on the same table I had used before. I slowly made their cups of tea and carefully arranged the cups. The letter sat next to the cups. I took a deep breath and carried the tray to the men. Mr. Adair had stopped talking. He watched me. I did not glance at him or Dr. Foxlow. I placed the tray near Mr. Adair. I saw him reach for the letter. I saw Dr. Foxlow nervously adjust himself in his seat. I kept my eyes down and did not look at either man. I picked up the other tray that I had left before. I walked away and returned to the table. I heard Mr. Adair unfold the letter. I tidied up the tray. After a few minutes, I looked at Mr. Adair. He was staring at me. A smile played on his lips. His eyes danced. He began to chuckle. I remained impassive and left the room. I glanced in their direction once before I left. I saw Dr. Foxlow watching me. He did not appear to be pleased. I walked to my room, and Sal was waiting as if she knew. I took her by the leash and walked to the back door of the castle. I walked outside and made my way to the castle stables. Old Man Seamus saw me approaching and waited for me. I leaned close to him and whispered in his ear. He looked into my eyes for a few moments, and then he silently took her leash. I turned at the sound of Mr. Adair's voice. He was walking towards the stables with Dr. Foxlow. They were approaching quickly. I could hear Mr. Adair's booming voice grow louder and closer. She is a beauty. I purchased her a month ago, he said. I knew that he was referring to his new horse that he had brought home when he had last visited Dublin. He was bringing Dr. Foxhill to the stables to show him his beauty. I returned my gaze to Old Man Seamus and nodded at him. Old Man Seamus disappeared into the stables with Sal. I watched them for a few moments before I started walking towards the house. I heard the men's voices grow more distant. Dr. Foxhill's voice carried over the wind. I could not clearly hear him, but I could see that he had been watching me. I wondered if he was still arguing with Mr. Adair. He had tried that entire morning to impress Mr. Adair. He had tried to convince him to rethink his plans for his tenants, but he had not, to my knowledge, tried to convince him to allow me to stay. The tray had been placed between the men. Dr. Foxhill had seen the letter lying on the tray. I knew that he wished to save the tenants, but he did not wish to save me. Then again, his refusal to argue with Mr. Adair on my behalf might have been an attempt to save me. I wondered if he had argued on my behalf after I had left the room. I never heard them argue again. Had Dr. Foxhill argued on my behalf? Would he now? He has arrived. I can hear him at my door. I walk to the door and open it. He greets me with a warm smile. Good morning, Aoife, he says. Good morning, sir, I say. He frowns. Sir, he says, raising his eyebrows. I smile, but I do not answer him. I open the door widely, and he enters. He follows me to the kitchen. Are you going to make our tea again? I ask. Of course, I do a better job of it, he says. I can't help but laugh. He probably does make a better pot of tea. He certainly takes less time to do so. Seat yourself, he says, motioning towards the servants' dining table. I sit down and watch him. He looks in my direction. Well, tell me more, he says. And so I do. After months of following false leads, the sheriff finally refused to investigate any further. Mr. Adair actually seemed relieved. We were all surprised that he did not insist on further investigations. It had been 5 months since the murder occurred, and the only conviction had been Mr. Deary's for perjury. I was in the kitchen with Mrs. O'Donnell. I was helping her slice apples again. This task had been exclusively assigned to me ever since I had so impressed her with my skills. I was seated at the table with Sally at my feet. Mrs. O'Donnell and I were talking when someone knocked on the kitchen door that led to the area behind the house. That door was never locked. It was used by the household servants, and no one ever knocked on that door. Mrs. O'Donnell gave me an amused look and walked to the door. She opened it and did not say a word. I thought that was odd. I turned around to see the sheriff standing in the doorway. Hello, I said. He smiled at me. Hello, may I come in? He asked. Mrs. O'Donnell stared at him. She was speechless. My smile faded. I knew that Mrs. O'Donnell always greeted people, even when she wasn't pleased to see them. She considered social amenities to be moral requirements. She had grown pale. She opened the door widely. You know why I am here? He asked. She nodded. I didn't want to believe it, she said. I turned around completely in my chair. I am afraid it is true, he said. I stared at Mrs. O'Donnell. She gave me a weary look. She motioned to the table. The sheriff walked to the table and seated himself. I got up from the table and went to the kitchen to prepare tea. Mrs. O'Donnell seated herself. I watched from my vantage point. The sheriff looked at Mrs. O'Donnell with sympathy. Do you live here at the Glebe House? He asked. Yes, but I have some relations that live on the estate, she said. She looked up at him. When did he do it? She asked. February. He went to the courts and started the proceedings, he said. His tenants do not know, she said. I feared as much, he said. How long do they have? She asked. He was silent for a few moments. I saw that he was avoiding her stare. He finally looked her in the eyes. 1 week from today, he said. She slowly nodded. I am sorry I did not come sooner. It is shameful, he said. You are here now, she said. I wish I could refuse, he said. I know you do, she said. I walked to the table and handed each of them a mug of tea. Thank you, love, she said. Is Mr. Adair going to increase everyone's rent? I asked. I had heard the term rack renting used by some of the tenants to describe the practice of charging far too much for rent to get rid of tenants. The word rack was a none too subtle reference to the infamous rack used by medieval torturers. Then it crossed my mind that the sheriff would not be necessary to enforce new leases with much higher rents. Dread washed over me. No, love, he is going to make everyone leave, she said, her voice trailing off. I had known that it was possible, but I too had been unwilling to believe that he would ever actually do it. What if they refuse? I asked, looking hopefully at the sheriff. The sheriff looked at me for several moments before he answered. I watched as his expression grew graver. Finally, he looked away from me. Then I will have to remove them, he said. I looked at Mrs. O'Donnell and she nodded. I will tell them, I said, overcome with the need to do something to help. Mrs. O'Donnell did not argue with me, neither did the sheriff. There are few cottages that have been spared, he said. I walked to the kitchen counter and tore off a piece of wrapping paper. I grabbed Mrs. O'Donnell's pencil. I returned to the table and handed both to the sheriff. He quickly wrote the names of the tenants fortunate enough to be spared. I spent the next several hours walking from cottage to cottage with my terrible tidings. Sally remained at my side. It took me 2 days, but I managed to visit every cottage whose inhabitants were about to be evicted. Every person I met was grateful that I had visited. Many were angry, but none directed their anger at me. Some succumbed to fits of weeping. All were devastated. Sean had gradually recovered by that time, but he was still not capable of walking for 2 days. I knew this to be true, so I had not asked him to accompany me. When I had finished my task, I told him what was about to take place. He and I were carrying out some of his duties in the stables. He was brushing Pegasus when I told him. He stopped brushing her and walked to a bench. He sat down. He looked past me with a distant look in his eyes. They cannot possibly prepare themselves in 1 week, he said. I know, I said. Aoife, what will they do? He asked. I was taken aback. He was normally the one that guided me, and now he was asking me for guidance. I looked into his eyes. They pleaded with me. I felt terrible. I could not say anything useful. I did not know what the tenants would do. I knew that there was nothing that could be done to stop the evictions. Mrs. O'Donnell had said that the Crown could pardon a murderer, but that it was powerless to prevent an eviction once the process had begun. There was no law that could prevent what was about to take place in only a week's time. There was not even a method of appeals to forestall the evictions. Since I had no answer for Sean, I sat next to him and held his hand. We both remained silent, silenced by despair and dread. I knew that the only person who could delay or stop the evictions was Mr. Adair. I knew that he would not. As I sat next to Sean, I said a silent prayer. I prayed that God would take Mr. Adair.